Hello and welcome to Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. I'm your host, Tamiko Faison. Today we have a special guest. He has been so gracious. We had some technical difficulties and he has agreed to come back. I spoke about him in my previous monologue, so I am so excited that he is here with us on today. This podcast is dedicated to therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color who are leading in their space and supporting them in their roles. Our guest today is Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson has been an occupational therapy assistant for 10 years. His clinical background is in his preferred setting of pediatrics, both school-based and outpatient-based. But he additionally has clinical experience in short-term rehab, skilled nursing facilities, and some orthopedic experience. He has been in academia for the past 6 years, first as an instructor for 3 years, and for the last 3 years as an academic fieldwork coordinator and instructor. His belief is every student brings a unique experience and perspective and encourages students to blend that unique piece of themselves into their development as a future occupational therapy practitioner. Mr. Johnson is also heavily involved in his state Florida Occupational Therapy Association and national professional organizations, both the American Occupational Therapy Association, and believes that this is a necessary requirement for early transitioning therapists to be part of their professional organizations and maintain membership throughout their professional career. Welcome back.
Hey, Tamiko, thank you. Welcome to be here.
All right. So I read that great bio all about your work as a clinician, but also as a instructor and being really involved in your professional organizations. Can you tell us about yourself in your own words and how you became interested in OT?
Yeah, so more or less OT, it was a second, I'd say love, put it that way. Originally, I went to school for medical doctor and kind of went down a path of I wanted more patient contact, and I decided to make a little bit of a different decision. So I went and I researched some things and went down to my local university, Kaiser University in Miami, Florida, and I was informed by my advisor at that time that there was this field called occupational therapy. And specifically, it was an occupational therapy assistant program that I was going to interview for. And honestly, once I started to hear about OT and look it up and just process it, it really just stuck. The whole concept of, you know, working with people and just getting them back into doing the things that they love to do, that drew me. So I knew for a fact at that moment, I'd found the right place that I needed to be in the medical field. And it wasn't as a doctor, it was as an occupational therapy assistant. So funny enough.
That's interesting. That's really common, you know. I haven't done any research to see if that's more common with minorities, that the, you know, at least in my experience with the therapists that I've talked, many minority therapists that I've talked to, that at first it was, you know, biology pre-med, and then they're exposed to occupational therapy and realize that it also could be a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that, you know, it's awareness, you know, as an occupational therapy practitioner, I think a lot of times, because it's our job, we think, oh, everyone knows what we do. But when we start to, you know, sometimes branch out, people go, what's OT, you know, and I think that's our time for us to shine, where we have to say, you know, what do you like to do from the morning to when you go to sleep? That's an occupation. And what my career is to help you do those things and get back into them. Depending on the reason of what it is, you know, we adapt, we compensate, et cetera. But at the same time, that's what we do. And overall, most of the time when you talk to people and tell them like that, they're like, wow, that's interesting. You mean, you know, what are the options there? And then kind of like, well, pretty much we can do almost anything you want to do. It's just, it all depends on the situation, you know, and the time frame, your age, et cetera. So, yeah, I love the field.
Yeah, educational marketing and getting the word out and letting people know exactly what we do is so important. That's one of the things that I've been doing recently, is going to HBCUs and just getting the word out about occupational therapy. And you're right, once people have an understanding of what it is, many of them are interested in learning more and may even become occupational therapists.
Yeah, and it, especially what you just said there, you know, I think even more now, it's more relevant than ever, right? People right now, their occupations are, you know, and disruption are, I should say, they're having issues with it. They can't do the things that they used to do. And I think that's our time to shine. Because we kind of have a good idea of how to work and adapt and get them back into those things, right? You know, so I'm very, very happy and proud to be in the field. And anyone I tell, I'm really pretty passionate about it. I'm sure you can hear it a little bit in my voice, but it's one of those things that I could talk about it all day. Eat, sleep, and you know, breathe all the tea. So
that's awesome. Yeah, it's important to have passion with what you do. You know, if you don't have passion, what do you have? And this is one of the professions that, you know, a lot of people I talk to are, there's a lot of, you know, job satisfaction. But let's switch gears a little bit. So you go into OT, you decide, you know, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be an occupational therapist. You love the profession. How did you make that leap from clinician to being a leader? Were you born a leader, or do you feel like you developed some skill set? Did someone start mentoring you?
I would say coming into the field of occupational therapy and being assistant specifically, I think it's a little bit of a unique situation compared to our occupational therapists, because just by nature of the name assistant sometimes causes some people to think, well, you know, I can't be a leader. So I would say it definitely was something I built into it, and it grew on me. But I think I was someone that probably had those qualities. It just one of those things I tell a lot of students, you just got to trust yourself, trust your gut, you know, don't have a fear of failing, because you don't know your potential until you try. And you do learn a lot by, you know, at times failing, because you learn about what makes you tick. You learn also what you can do differently. And I think for an occupational therapy practitioner, that's right in a wheelhouse, right? Of, well, what is the issue here and how do I address it? I mean, if you ask any practitioner in occupational, they'd be like, okay, that's a clinic. You're going to use your clinical knowledge or your clinical analysis to find the issue. So I would say I grew into it. And as I've gotten, you know, more and more time and experience, I've now felt like now I'm ready to be more of a leader going forward.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So it sounds like this is something that, you know, developed over time. But you said, you know, you looked at this clinical skill set that we have. And, you know, sometimes I think about how easy it is for us to do that for other people and how hard sometimes it is for us to do it for our own selves. But it sounds like you took that skill set that you already know that you're using with other folks to say, okay, let me problem solve this. And I think OTs, you know, take that word of advice. The OTs that are listening, aspiring leaders and entrepreneurs, you already have that skill set and you're using it clinically that you could use for yourself.
I mean, just let's just think about it, right? We talk about all the time in occupational therapy how we adapt. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you have to do, adapt. And those who usually adapt, they're able to kind of find solutions to problems and unique solutions. And I think we have to do that. That, to me, is part of our unique value, is that we find those adaptations or those unique solutions. And we're able to find good outcomes, right? Our outcomes are tremendous. So I definitely preach all occupational therapy practitioners to definitely don't question yourself. Just do it. Just go out there and try it.
Okay, now. Just do it like Nike, right?
That's right.
And then another thing you said I want to go back to is you said, you know, and this has been a reoccurring theme on this podcast, you know, that failure is part of the process and that, you know, not to be afraid of failure. What do you think it is that for some folk that they, you know, what would you say to the person that is like paralyzed by that vulnerability? Because when you're a leader, you know, no matter what you're doing, you're putting yourself out there and you have to be vulnerable.
I'll be honest with you. I think part of it has to do analysis by paralysis. Frankly speaking, we think sometimes too deep. Sometimes it's right in front of you, right? The answer is just just try. And I think sometimes we talk ourselves out of it, or question our abilities, and you shouldn't question your abilities. If you know what you're doing, you put in the time, you prepared yourself, what's holding you up? It's yourself holding yourself. You're holding yourself back. So I feel like one of those things, the biggest thing to me is, I just think a lot of times we question ourselves to the point that, yeah, we paralyze ourselves. And we don't take that leap that we should just because we question ourselves. And it's no one else. It really just has to do about, it's within us, put it that way.
Yeah. And, I think worse than doing something and not succeeding in, you know, the way that you thought you wanted to succeed, which some people define as failure. And like, I agree with you that you're always learning something from it. I think what hurts even more is regret and mm-hmm. not taking that step, like looking back and saying, I wish I could have. And you just didn't do it because you have, what is that term you use? Paralysis?
Analysis by paralysis.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's, you know, think about it. We're occupational therapy practitioners. We all the time are analyzing situations. How's the patient sitting? How a patient standing? How a patient, you know, walking in their gait? How are they, you know, their functional ability? What's going on? If you apply that same thought process, that means when we look at decision-making, sometimes those are the things we do. And sometimes you just need to take the simple route. You know, it's 2 + 2 = 4 instead of being like, well, is it 3 + 1 or is it something else? What other variation is there? It's just flat out. Sometimes we just have to start. And it's uncomfortable at times. Don't get me wrong. But I think, as I said to you about the failure, and I think what you may be hearing it being a constant trend is, honestly, I think all of us feel that uncomfortable feeling at some point. And then we kind of do it and you respond to, in a way, what happens, right? What's the outcome, right? So I'll give an example. Sometimes students will say to me, I really have a hard time presenting in front of a class. And I'll say to them, you've literally been in front of your same classmates for a year. You know them, you hang out with them, etc. Why? And they'll just say, you know what? It's just that when I get up here, I start to get worried. And I say, just, how about you just stop thinking about that and just focus on whatever you're trying to articulate, you know, to your audience. Just go for it, you know? And sometimes when you look at people to an audience, you'll see a little head nod, and that little mm-hmm. head nod tells you, mm-hmm. oh, I'm on the right pace. I'm doing something okay. People are hearing it. I'm on the right track. So yeah, I think that's just one of those things. But as I said to you, I feel like our field is uniquely positioned, to handle and address a lot of issues, and, you know, potential questions that are out there.
I agree 100%. And the students are very fortunate to have you to help problem solve that. So if they come to you and say, you know, I feel like I'm just gonna, you know, I can't stand in front of people. And I think that just goes to the point of how important it is to have, you know, mentors. If you're not a student, you don't have a Mr. Andre Johnson to help you process that, finding someone to help you with those areas that are paralyzing you and preventing you from, you know, living up to your full potential in leadership or entrepreneurial roles. And I will say, for the longest, I did not want to speak in front of people. I would get so nervous. Even when I was teaching, I would get so nervous that my stomach would get upset. And so I had to figure that thing out because I like to talk. And I ended up doing Toastmasters. And so that was very helpful. I did it for a year, but that was a skill that I could improve on instead of just stopping in fear and not letting that, you know, and not moving forward. So there are people that are available. There are mentors, there are organizations, there's ways to improve in an area that you feel like, you know, could prevent you from doing something that you feel like you really should be doing.
Absolutely. And I think mentors are great. They're necessary. I'd also say to you, you know, as much as I help my students, I would say they help me a ton. Mm-hmm. To me, I feel like learning is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. So sometimes, and I'd say many a time, my students teach me some things that, you know, maybe a perspective that I didn't think of or didn't see, or they say something and I go, huh, that's pretty good. that's something you could definitely consider down the road, or you know, formulate and create. So it's one of those things where I really believe you can learn from everyone. But overall, networking and mentorship is really important.
I agree. And it's definitely a two-way street. And another thing you said is that over time, you know, you become more confident. So you know how we teach occupation as a means, occupation as an end. You learn by doing. So you do it and you get more comfortable. And so the more I spoke in Toastmasters, the more I became comfortable. I was talking to you about that the last time we spoke, about how I, you know, I use a lot of slang, and you said, you know what, you're a person, you know, this is being authentic. Absolutely. So what? You know, and I think sometimes, you know, when I talk to some minority students, you know, we're careful about how we speak and concerned about if we're going to get judged and all those things. And, you know, just what you said, just do it, do it. And, sometimes, like you said, people will be in the audience nodding. So sometimes when I slip some of that slang in, you know, I'll see the head nods or the laughter or the smiles break out. And it's just amazing that when you move forward, the impact that you can have.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, like you said, you went to Toastmasters. I've heard a few people have been there in regards to just, you know, working on that and going and doing speeches and, you know, standing in front of people. And frankly, yeah, it's one of those things. Don't get me wrong. You know, I may sometimes sound like I'm okay, but I've been in front of, you know, a group of 3,000 people, and I'm kind of like, oh boy, like that's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're looking for that head nod in a group of 3,000 people, there's likely to be someone who's going,
All right.
You know, but you just kind of, as you said, you just have to do it. And once you do it, you kind of go, I didn't know I could do it, but I did it. So let's go.
That's right. And then you have, you know, as one of my friends says, you have the feather in your hat and you can move forward to the next big thing. So 3,000 people. Okay, that's a lot. I don't know if I've ever talked to an audience with like 3,000 people. So what leadership role were you in? And tell us about, you know, that experience and what other leadership roles you have. Some of them I spoke about in the bio earlier.
Well, that specific event, I believe, was I can't tell you it was 3,000 people exactly, but it was at AOTA conference in 2018. We were at the town hall. We were talking about the entry level mandate.
Okay.
You know, and I was an occupational therapy assistant. You know, I would say to you, younger in my career, mind you, it's just 2 years, but still, you know, to be up there with very respected colleagues. Talking about that issue was definitely challenging, but at the same time, it was one of those things where it's like, I felt a need to speak. And I think I was heard that day. At the same time, you know, like you said, you just gotta do it. And when I did it, I felt pretty good about what had transpired. But overall, leadership wise, I am on AOTA's Commission of Education as an OTA educator. Additionally, I'm on my state's board in regards to the membership concerns coordinator. So more or less, I get to, you know, hear complaints, hear how sometimes we need to change things. I also hear the good things. And I love people. But I think that's one of my biggest things. Relationships, it's one of the things I say are so crucial to everyone. Relationships are everything to me. So you get to meet people, talk to them, you understand what people are going through. And I think in those leadership positions, I've benefited greatly in regards to hearing what people overall feel, need, etc. And that's been a great, great takeaway from it overall for me.
Yeah. So you connect well with others. And so speaking of connecting, I'm just curious about your experiences as an African-American male in the profession and how that has impacted. And I know you are extremely, one thing I can say, you know, from our last talk, I was like, he is so optimistic. Like this is the like eternal, like I say I'm really optimistic, but I have my times where I'm like very negative when I you know, like woe is me, cloud, little cloud over my head. And so But I tried to be more optimistic than pessimistic. But I remember when we talked last, I was like, oh my goodness, no matter what, you just seem like you have such a positive outlook on life and the profession.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, the truth is I try to just look at things from, there's always got to be a solution, you know? And I also just sometimes look at it also from history's perspective. frankly, the planet has always been here and it's going to still be here. And it's going to keep moving forward. So my thought is always, you know, there's always got to be some type of light in the dark alley. Let's put it that way. I think this year has taught me that as well. As much as I may sound optimistic, this year has been trying. And I know it's been trying for a lot of people too. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I've just continued to say is 2021 is going to be better. Light's coming. It's going to be a good year. And that's just how I feel about it. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I'd rather be that than be a Debbie Downer per se about it. Mm-hmm. And I just think, honestly, it's just one of those things you just got to be yourself. That's me personally. You know, I'll say to you, maybe in the past, I wasn't always as optimistic because sometimes people don't want to hear optimistic all the time. But to be honest with you, that's part of growth. So I just try to be me. That's it. So, yeah.
Well, what challenges or have you faced any challenges as an leader of color in the profession? I didn't say the percentage. I think you told me actually last time what the percentage of African-American males.
Yeah, I think we're less than 1% of the occupational therapy field. So there's some unique challenges built into just having that, right? A lot of times we always say, if you see that face that looks like you, it makes it more comfortable. Well, yeah, when you have 1%, that's something that we have to talk about. Yeah, I face challenges with it. I mean, I think sometimes I'm maybe not as cognizant of it because I try not to think of it per se. But I know it exists and it definitely is there. And as I said to you, being an assistant too creates there's another layer to that, right? Because just within the name, it kind of creates you should be in the background, not so much in the front. And I just don't necessarily agree with that, put it that way. I feel if anyone has got knowledge and they got something to say, and it's actually something factual, go for it, speak up. So that's what I honestly charge myself to do all the time. But there's challenges there in many different ways. You know, being a male too in the profession is one thing. But I'll say this to you and I'll put my hand to it. This field has been very welcoming too. The ladies, both ways, I'm talking about African American, Hispanic, Caucasian American, etc., have been very, very willing to, one, either be a mentor or, you know, give me their ear and talk. So that's kind of what I'd say. There's definitely challenges, right? We can't act like we don't see certain things. They're there. But I think you can either be a person that you want to sulk in that, or we can kind of figure out how do we make sure that we push it to the next level to have those behind us build them up, right? So I'm a big person about opportunity. So to me, if there's ever an opportunity to give it to someone else, I do. And it doesn't matter what race, et cetera, they are. I just try to give an opportunity because I feel like there definitely has been opportunities provided to me. I may not know of exactly how it was given to me, but I know it was definitely there. So.
Right. We don't ever get to where we are by ourselves. It always takes a village. We say, you know, I say that about my kids. I'm like, it takes a village. I need eyes everywhere, you know, on my teenager. But, you know, even as adults, it still takes a village. And to realize that and then turn around and give back is so important. Now, with you in academia, what is the... Have you been active in terms of recruiting? I'm asking this because this is now one of the roles that I have, you know, recruiting and supporting minorities in the academic setting.
I mean, yes, I definitely have a role. At my university, usually speaking, you know, we try to be personal with our potential candidates. So one of the things that we try to do as a faculty a lot of the times is we like to, you know, show them around. I have to say to you, my particular university, Kaiser University in Jacksonville, it's very diverse. We have two Indian famed females. We have two Caucasian, one male, one female. And that's my program director is a female, and myself, an African American. So we have a pretty dynamic team, to put it that way. But one of the things also is assistants are actually, they're probably our most diverse sector of our field, right? Just think about it, lower entry level point to actually get in. The barrier is lower, right? Because in a sense, as an associate, there's less cost involved, et cetera.
Yes.
So it's one of the things, honestly, I really, really enjoy is actually the recruitment part. Yeah, trying to have fellow, just having a diverse field. I know that's something that, for example, the association AOTA has talked about, but you know, I feel like the only way you're going to have that happen is if action occurs.
Yes.
Know? And I think that intentional action, and that's something I've heard consistently from my fellow practitioners, is that we need intentionality when we do things. So to me, I take that type of I take it as a challenge to myself to, you know, if I see another African-American interested in program, I take it upon me to kind of say, this is what the field is. I don't try to skew them one way or another, but I let them know, yeah, it's a possibility. You know, there's more me's, there's more Tamiko's, there's more, you know, whoever it is. So less will network, less build. I think sometimes we isolate, and that's where it can be scary. You know, that's one of the things that I hear from a lot of students. They'll say to me, sometimes I'm only the one African American in the class. I don't have someone to relate to. Yeah, because you're isolated. And when you're isolated, you know, you can kind of feel that way. But they do say to me too, once they find someone that they can confide in, it becomes a little bit easier. So to me, sometimes if that is that, you know, minority student, or even if it's a Caucasian student as well, I a lot of times will, you know, how would I say, initiate that process of saying, hey, how are you doing? You know, how are you feeling today? Let's talk, you know, especially this year, right? Going through the events of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a year where you need to kind of, I think, as a person in academia, be intentional to ask that question of, how are you doing today? Just saying that sometimes is very, very helpful to a lot of people. Just saying it and then truly listening to it. And how would I say this after that? You then obviously have to do something with that feedback. That's what I said, you know? And sometimes it's a little things, Tamiko. It's turning off the camera in the morning, because they're like, I can't. Last night was rough. There's a lot of things I'm seeing, and I just need the camera off, but I'm paying attention. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you said ask, actively listen, and then do something. So we can't just ask and hear about the challenge and say, you know, the listening sessions are great, but I think the other things you said that's really impactful is that after we listen, we're intentional with our actions. So we've got to follow up after we get that feedback.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we see things, right? You know, and mind you, progress sometimes comes in steps. It doesn't mean you get everything done in a day, right? This world, that's how it works, right? You sometimes have to take incremental steps. There's nothing wrong with it. Sometimes you get a larger step than you expected. But the point is, it's a process, you know? And my hope is that what we're seeing now with students galvanizing, and as I said to you, I've sat on so many calls and heard from the students, and I've been so impressed by the statements, the conviction, the confidence to speak up. Because I can be honest with you, I don't think I would have been that person as a student. That's just me saying that out there truthfully. But as a practitioner seeing it, I'm going, okay. Okay, these are our how would I say, these are our bearers for the future. They're going to, whatever we can do to foster, nurture, mentor, we need to do it. Because I think we're on a path. It doesn't mean that things are going to radically change at all, but it means that there's going to be some change occurring.
Right. We're taking steps in the right direction. So the person, the student has to speak up. And then also on our part, the leaders, we need to be asking. We need to be asking and being intentional again about taking the action. And I can agree with you, Andre. I know as a student, there were things that happened and I just suffered in silence, so to speak. You know, I'm like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just trying to get through. I listened to Kotad's Ignite. I think it was their second Ignite session last week. And Lauren Jones, who is from North Carolina. Hey, Lauren Jones, in case you're listening. I'm not sure she listens to it or not. But she was talking about the strategies that sometimes are identified as maladaptive, but were actually protective strategies that some students use. And one of them is, okay, I'm just going to put my head down. I forgot the term she used to describe it, but I'm just going to put my head down. I'm just going to do what I got to do. I'm not saying anything to anybody. I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers. I'm just trying to graduate. And although it's, you know, protective, it doesn't help with the progress. And I'm glad we're in a place now where there is an embracing of listening. And again, taking some action steps. And the more people speak up, the more people acknowledge it. Because like you, Andre, and when I was in OT school, I felt like I had very supportive faculty. And had I been more vocal, I'm sure I would have had more support. I definitely had support from someone outside of the program, but
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'll never forget OTA school. I had two Hispanic women that honestly they and I had an African-American AFWC and I still am in contact with most of them, and I will say to you this, I owe them a great debt, because in a sense they always motivated. They always said, hey, you're doing the right things, don't worry about it. You're doing the right thing, it's okay. You know, so yeah, I mean, as I said to you, that I think this is where we as educators, you know, we can learn from them, and they can learn from us, obviously, but we also need to sometimes help guide that process for them, because they've got great ideas, they just sometimes don't know how to get to the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that leads me to my next question, which was advice that you would give to therapists of color, even students of color, who are wanting to go into entrepreneurship or leadership positions or roles.
Well, my biggest thing I would say to you, your state association, that's got to be one of them, because the truth of the matter is wherever you live, that's your community. So you've got to make a difference in your community first. And then I would also say you got to be part of a national association. And the importance on that is because, you know, these processes don't just happen on the local level. It's local, state, federal. So that piece right there is important. But additionally, mentorship, reach out to the organizations, right? Like the National Black Occupational Therapy Caucus. That's a big thing. That community is very, very supportive. And it is, in a way, safe space. And I would say to you, and there's so many more, the MDI networks, all of them. It's for students, it is so crucial for you to reach out, because it's support resources, right? So resources, I think, overall are the biggest thing sometimes we forget that are crucial to success. For example, I wouldn't be able to do all the things I do without my wonderful girlfriend. She is thoughtful. She allows me some time to spend all this time doing OT stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I always give back there. That's my home, you know, so it's a balance. But long story short, I would say the biggest things is mentorship, reach out, and definitely be a part of associations, because there's a lot of help there and a lot of practitioners that are willing to help and give advice to help if you have an idea of what you want to do.
Yeah, so this is, again, going back to relationships and how you said you know, you love people and the importance of having people in your circle, whether it's a significant other, mm-hmm. a professional association, your classmates, but not to operate in a silo by yourself.
The silo is where we usually get in trouble, right? I mean, think about it when you were in OT school. I'm sure there were moments where you're going, I don't understand this concept. So maybe you talk to another fellow classmate and they said, Tomiko, how about you look at it this way? And you were like, huh, you know, it just clicked.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then sometimes it was the opposite way. They came to you and you went, boom. And they went, oh my goodness, it clicked.
Yep.
Without that interaction, without the relationship, that never occurs. So it's one of those things I tell students all the time, you know, build those relationships. When you have a clinical instructor, make sure you keep that relationship going, because a lot of times they know you, right? They got to sit with you for, if you're an OTA, for 8 weeks. If you're an OT, they sat with you for 3 months. They know who you are. They know how you work. They know your strengths, and they know some things you maybe need to improve on, right? So keep that relationship, foster it. And as I said, it works out both ways. The more you invest in people, the more you get out of life in general. That's just my opinion.
Goodness, so true. I just did a video about that earlier this morning. I do this like tip once a week on Facebook, and that's exactly, it's almost verbatim what you just said. Huh. You know, because there's some folks that they don't want to do that. They want to withhold information. And the reason I love to share is because it is a boomerang. You know, it's like you give out and then someone pours back into you. You sow seeds into others and they sow it right back into you. So it's always two way.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. Now, how can we support you? Like, what's next for you, and how can we support that?
Well, the next thing on my docket is the Commission of Education chairperson-elect position. I have formally put my name into the rodeo. So we'll see how that goes in January of 2021. Thank you.
All right, now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Just an experience, you know, just to go through the process. As I said to you, one of the things I try to do is I practice what I preach. I said, I like to be, you know, uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable. Because I'm going to likely, you know, when they posted the other candidates as well, all of us are going to have our faces posted everywhere. People are going to ask questions of, you know, why you as an assistant, you know, think you can do this role. And I'm going to respond in quarterly and say, because I put in the time. And I have a good idea of what's going on. And it's not just me, it's a team. There's a team on the Commission of Education. And I'm a big person of not relying on myself. That's the truth. Because here's the thing. If I am the one that is the sole bearer of everything, well, then if I'm not there, the system doesn't function right.
Oh my goodness, right? Yes.
So you gotta, this is where when you said earlier about investing in others, well, it's true, because if you give others that information, now say, you know, you need a sick day or you need a moment to step away. Well, you know what? They know the system, right? And I'm not a big fan of withholding information. I just think that's just, to be frank, it's a little silly. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's selfish in a way. Right. In a way, it is, you know. But that's my next thing. My next thing is the Commission of Education chairperson elect for AOTA. You know, after that, we'll see where it goes. I'm going to keep trying to push the levels. That's the whole thing to me, is that there's a lot to be done and there's a lot of work to be done. And I like work. So let's go. You know?
We need to vote, y'all. So this is voting season. We're recording this on the election, the presidential election.
You have to vote.
You have to, there's so many, like, this is a super important election, but just there's many things we need to vote for. So listen to Andre about all the, you know, what's coming up. We're going to see his face. We're going to see other faces. We're going to hear from them. We're going to be able to ask questions. And that's being a leader, you know, getting involved, voting, supporting whoever's in the leadership position.
Right. And also, when you're a part of it, you can hold them accountable for it. Right. Because listen, you voted for them. You're like, listen, I supported you. We need to talk. What's going on here? Right.
Right.
And that's how you hold people accountable. But that's really important. That's why I really preach about, you know, being part of your state association, your national associations, et cetera. You can't be complaining about reimbursement if you're not part of those. Why? Well, you can complain, but you can't be an input system, right? So vote, be a part of those things. But voting is one of our rights, and it's one of those things that I feel very strongly about, making sure that we utilize our rights. So one of those things we can never do is vote. And I hope everyone out there, yes, Tamiko said it, go out and vote. You got to do it because representation matters. And that's the only way you make progress is by voting. Yeah,
exactly. So we can support by paying attention and voting for you. If we're in agreement with what you stand for, I don't doubt that I'm going to be casting a vote for you, Andre. I'm looking forward to, I've seen, you know, and this is not premature. I don't think I've seen, you know, I've been following you on social media. So I love social media for the networking, you know, to be able to see, leaders, entrepreneurs, people of color, and what they're doing, because otherwise I'm like, who is this, you know? And so it's just opened up a lot of doors for us to see representation, because we don't always see it. At least I haven't, in my experience, you know, getting the awards, taking on the leadership positions, doing the Slagle lectures and so forth, when you're looking for it. But we are out there and we are doing things, and social media has opened up doors for us to be able to see that more.
So I think that helps in networking, right? The social media component, it's one of those things a lot of times, and I'm sure you even see it and you probably wonder yourself. As a field, we talk about awareness as an issue. Social media is your boom horn. It's a free boom horn. You go out there and you just tell them all the good things they're doing and how you're helping people. And guess what? Everyone goes, oh, wow. Like, okay, now I'm interested to know this occupational therapy thing. I see it. I see what it's doing. Now maybe I need to ask a little bit more questions, right? And then we get that progress. But networking too. I tell people all the time, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, I don't know, whatever it is, whatever medium that you like, go on there, send invites. And listen, social media is one of those things, it's social. It's okay to send an invite to someone you don't know personally. That's the difference to me with social media versus face to face, right? Sometimes when you don't know someone face to face, you're hesitant because you're like, you know, that's their time. I don't want to intervene and take their time away. But social media, yay, if they don't really care for it, they just go reject.
Right.
And you move on. If they hit accept, guess what? Now you got another connection. You can talk to people. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more with you about social media and its impact that it can have.
Yeah, I'm just listening about our reoccurring theme that we've talked about is, you know, the connections, the relationships, people. And I forgot to say this earlier when you were talking about, you know, you're not doing this on your own, going into this leadership position. And you say, I might need a sick day. And I just want to put a plug in for entrepreneurs. If you're just doing it completely by yourself, what are you going to do if you need a sick day? You know, entrepreneurs also, you cannot do it on your own. And if you haven't read the book, The E-Myth, and you're an entrepreneur, I highly recommend it because it talks about just what Andre just mentioned, the importance of having systems and people to support you in whatever it is that you're doing, because it's not just about you. It's about all the other people that you're helping. So if it only depends on you, you're limited in your capacity. Your impact is limited.
Yeah, so when I see in the MBOTC and I see all the wonderful African-American clinicians, man, it's amazing to see the things in that. I tell you.
Isn't it? Yeah, it is.
I'm just like, wow. I mean, you know, today I saw somebody talking about low vision and I was like, wow, okay, now we're going to move. We're doing it. And they're providing opportunity for someone else. And I'm like, okay, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I saw it. I actually responded because that's the majority of my business. I saw her. I was like, what? Atlanta, Georgia? Low vision? Okay. And she's hiring someone else? Yes. Yes.
Exactly. And that's one of those things, too. I love just, you know, there's opportunities that are available, right? Posting them. Just telling people, hey, you know what? There's an opportunity to run for a position if you want. Go for it. Why not?
Yeah, you are really good about doing that. I've noticed that you post, you know, you really share a lot of information about what's going on, this position, you know, check this out. And I really appreciate you doing that. And you know what? I need to share that more. So that's the other thing we can do. If we're not the one posting, but we see it, we can share it. We can share it on our platform.
I agree. I mean, that's the thing about social media, right? You just click a button and
yep.
So if you've got 5,000 followers and you hit share, all right, now it's not going to go to all 5,000, right? That's the misconception. At the same time, it's going to maybe go to 1,000 people.
Right.
So that's 1,000 people that you didn't see it, didn't know. So if they click on it, hey, you know, even if it's 15 people, you made an impact, you made a difference, you made a change, and someone has now another option. Exactly. Or an opportunity. So I think that's so important. Just providing those opportunities for others. You know, sometimes, like, for example, you have a successful business. I wish you all the best. And I think you're just going to keep growing your business, right? But as you continue to grow, there's going to be positions where you go, you know, I can't necessarily do this role anymore. Hey, there's someone that can, and I think they're quite qualified. So here we go. And we build it up together. So
yeah, I'm exactly at that place. I had to put that on my site not too long ago that I couldn't take any more clients because I was full. Okay. And so now I've got to figure out how to teach other people to do some of the things that I do. And so again, that will open up other opportunities for other people, because the goal again is impact.
Yes. And I've seen you recruiting for Duke. I think you're working for Duke now and stuff. And that's awesome. I mean, we need more of it. And I think it's great. When I saw it, my eyes just like opened up wide. Went, okay. Learn Durham. You're doing things.
I'm so excited about this position. I'm just going to really quick blurb about the position is dedicated to minority recruitment and retention. And, I think that's just a very unique position, and we don't require, there's no GRE required. There's no prerequisites. There's no observation hours required. And some people will message me. I have a lot of minority students, as well as, you know, people who are not minorities who are advocates for this role and, you know, being very supportive. What can I do to help? But they say, is that just, you know, those admission requirements, is that just because of COVID? And the answer is no, it's not. It's the way it is, you know, so yeah. trying to break down some barriers. You know, Duke is a private institution. And so whatever we can do to help break down other barriers, where the goal is to do that so we can have a diverse inaugural cohort.
And that's awesome. I love to hear that. And, you know, I look forward to seeing the growth of that program, because yeah, anything's a barrier. You know, sometimes we don't realize sometimes $50 for a student to pay for an application.
That
can be a barrier.
It can be a barrier. It sure can. And sometimes we get far removed. I mean, I remember back in the days, it was like, we're trying to get gas money. So yeah, $50 is a lot of money. We were, you know, paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And there's still people, lots of people. I mean, we got a pandemic going on. There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's paycheck to paycheck. $50 is a lot. You're right.
You know,
for some people.
And I'm being very kind to say $50 for application. But
right.
Know, one of those things. Yeah, all of it's a barrier. You know, I'll quickly segue off this for a second. I have an experience that, you know, just recently I got accepted in a master's program. And the only reason I didn't give up on the acceptance process was because I understood, simply put, that sometimes hiccups happen. So basically what happened is I turned in my application. My application got lost. Never heard anything. And I was going 2-3 weeks going, it's after the deadline. Am I going to hear something? Wow. So I reached out to the graduate program coordinator and said, you know, hi, my name is Audrey Johnson. I turned an application. I'm not quite sure, you know, what happened. She said to me, she responded back and said, I don't see your application.
Oh my goodness.
I took a screenshot and I sent it to her and she went, oh, and she looked it up like a different way and found it. And I was accepted to the program. Right. So that's one of those things that's a barrier right there, that as a student, I would have been like, oh, I guess I'm just not good enough to be in the program. But as I said to you, don't give up, right? Push to the response. And as I said to you, luckily I did, because when I did, she told me, you know, we'll have it reviewed. And both the program directors did that. And they said, you're accepted to the program. So I'm now, you know, going for a dual master's in public administration and nonprofit management. So,
congratulations, Andre. You didn't tell us that when I said what's next for you. So I'm glad you took a side and That's a big deal.
You know, I would, to be honest with you, wasn't going to talk about that. I don't really talk too much about myself personally when it comes to those type of things, right? Until it's done, right? Once I got my degree, then I would feel comfortable being like, hey, I got a degree, okay? But at the same time, yeah, it's something that I felt it was relevant for that moment to express that, because I'm sure there's a lot of students out there that they hold on to the application, they send it out, and sometimes they're going, dang, I'm not good enough. I didn't get an acceptance letter. I didn't get nothing. Pick up the phone or get an email and contact them, because sometimes it just got missed. It happens. Mistakes happen. You know,
exactly. And that whole process of filling out applications, you know, again, back to having some support with that. I was doing that last year with my son. He turned 18 this year. And so we were doing the college applications, and I was just thinking, this is a lot. You know, I have degrees and I'm struggling a little bit with this application process. So I can only imagine for people who don't have the same literacy level, you know, maybe English is not their first language. I can just imagine a lot of barriers that could take place for different people from different backgrounds when they're going through that application process. So again, use your resources, use your people, you know, ask questions, call, get help. Again, you don't have to do anything by yourself.
Agreed.
All right. So we're going to wrap up here. Andre, what else would you like the audience to know? Do you have any last pearls of wisdom or a quote that you'd want to leave the audience with?
No quotes. I think my last thing I want to say, is just keep pushing. I have over the last few months, just to be honest with you, our field it's in good hands. I've seen so many students, and just I'm so impressed. I want them to know that. So if they hear this, let it be said, I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing. They are just, it's impressive where our field is going. I think it's got a great, great, great future. And that is perhaps for me, and maybe an optimist in saying this, that to me makes my day, just to see it, just to see the growth. You know, last week, as I said to you, I was at the AOTA ALC meetings, and to hear the students, Brandon Cook, Sue Siney, Ronnie Drummond. I know I'm missing a couple of names. There was a wonderful African-American female. She really brought it. And I apologize for forgetting her name there, but I was so impressed. They had a group of educators just completely mesmerized, going, I get it. I see the struggles. I hear it. And we need to do something to change it. So my last piece is just to say, basically, for everyone out there, just keep pushing it. We're going to do just fine if you do that. It's okay to be uncomfortable because you learn a lot about yourself. So just keep it up. That's it.
Keep pushing. You heard what he said. Keep pushing. There is light, and we are moving in the right direction. So we are very grateful for that and for the leaders in our profession who are helping us to move in that direction, including our guest today, Mr. Andre Johnson. Thank you so much again. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Until next time.
Thank you.